There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk cars now. Bill Carter joins us in the studio from Auto Data, acting general manager, Bill, I hear.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good to have you, you. Here. Let's run through the topics first of all. Three things to chat with you about today. VAT and your vehicle. We'll start with that in a moment. Modifications. Question, do they add or detract? What does it mean when cars are modded? What should you be looking for or not looking for? And also here's a question. How safe would you feel in a self-driving car? Something that a lot of people are beginning to really question at the moment. Yep. Those three things. Let's start with VAT. VAT is coming, Bill.
Yep.
January the 18th, January 2018, the 1st of January to be precise. What does it mean? What does it mean for car prices?
I think, you know, that there's still a bit of confusion out there, and there will be until everybody gets used to it. So let's explain as simply as I possibly can how VAT affects a new car and how it affects a used car.
Right.
So if we take a car that costs 100,000 dirhams new, and you pay VAT on it, the price goes up to 105,000 dirhams because VAT at 5% on 100,000 is 5,000 dirhams. Mm. So you pay VAT on a full price. Now, with a used car, the scenario is different. So if you had a used car that was 100,000 dirhams, it depends on how much the dealer bought it for. So if the dealer buys it for 80, spends 5 on it, refurbishing it and getting it ready, his margin is 15,000 dirhams. Okay?
Right.
So you only pay VAT on the 15,000 dirhams, which is 750 dirhams.
I wouldn't have known that. I wouldn't have thought that. The other thing with this is when you get your receipt or you get the final bill for your car, you're going to know exactly what the margin is on the car.
Yeah.
Should that be declared before you buy the car?
In reality, I believe it should, because one of the big problems we've always had here is the lack of transparency over car pricing and what you're being charged for and everything else. Our view is that the industry needs to change and needs to become transparent. And this is how it is. At the end of the day, what we don't know yet is whether the VAT element actually has to be shown on the invoice or not, or whether the invoice just shows a total price. Now, that is from what I've read so far, is not particularly clear. So I don't honestly know what is going to happen with the used car, whether it will show the VAT element. Because if it does, then you can soon work out what the margin is on the car, obviously.
Yeah, because, for example, say you had an unscrupulous dealer and maybe they said they spent 30,000 doing it up, so they could charge you a bit more on the VAT. Where is it checked across in terms of spent?
Yeah, that would be checked by the Federal Tax Authority, because obviously when they're doing a VAT audit, they will want to see every piece of paper relating to that transaction. So, you know, it will be checked. Yes, there will people plead ignorance and still getting used to the system, etc., etc., etc. But at the end of the day, the Federal Tax Authority will go through line by line to see that you've made the correct declaration of VAT.
So I would guess that there are many people listening thinking, hold on a minute, so it's the margin that the 5% applies to rather than the actual cost of the car.
Exactly.
That's probably a headline grabber.
Yeah, I mean, this is how it's always been in the UK and Europe. You know, on a used vehicle, VAT is value added tax. So it's how much value you're adding to that item. So with a used car, the value you're adding, in essence, is the margin. So what you've spent on buying the car and you've spent on refurbishing it or repairing it, the value add is the difference between that and what you actually sell the car for.
Okay. Would lots of car dealers not think, well, the value added here is the fact that I have the car, that's the value, I'm going to charge 5% on the whole lot? I mean, is there a regulation there that says you can't do that?
Yes.
There is.
As far as we're aware, the regulation is the same, is basically very similar to what it is in the UK, is that you pay VAT on the margin, you can claim VAT back on any cost of repairs. So if it has to go out for an external repair to another workshop and you pay VAT on that, the dealer can claim that VAT back, but then has to charge VAT on his margin.
It sounds like it's suddenly making used cars look very appealing. Well,
yes,
you know?
Exactly. This is and this is what we've been saying ever since that the fact that VAT was being brought in, is that what we've already started to see now, new car dealers are saying, buy now and beat the VAT.
Mm. Of course.
Which, you know,
understandable.
But in essence, all that's going to do is rob the sales from quarter one next year. The other thing that will happen is quarter one next year, the headline grabber will be, we paid the VAT.
Yeah.
You know, so the promotion, instead of being free insurance, free whatever, it will be, we'll pay the VAT, you know, and that will sound like a really good deal.
A 5% it won't be, though, will it?
No. The thing is, it will take the consumers a little while to twig that 5% VAT, actually, I'm getting more than that off now with the current offers. So, you know, it's just one of those things. The more switched on dealers will manipulate what they're doing. I mean, you know, in essence, a switched on dealer that does it right could actually earn a bit more margin on a new car, you know, if they cut back some of the other offers.
But Bill, so, what do you think it's going to mean for new car sales? How much of an impact do you think VAT is going to have in the new year?
None
at all.
Well,
really?
I think it will have a minor impact to start with for the first quarter, perhaps two. And then everybody will get used to it. It's like everything else, you know, people get used to it and they don't think. Salic was the same, wasn't it? When Salic started, everybody went, oh, I'm not driving down that road, it's got Salic. Everybody does it now and you don't think about it.
Nobody can be bothered to do something different to save themselves money is essentially the problem, isn't it? We've just had a text in for you, Bill, from Stephanie. She says, does VAT apply if you're buying privately, i.e. A second-hand car rather than from a dealer?
No.
Interesting.
On a consumer-to-consumer sale, no. It's only where there is this value add.
What if I'd modded the car? Could I charge a VAT on it?
No. That's a whole new ball game.
We're going to talk about exactly that in a moment, Bill. That's interesting, though, because that does mean the likes of the Debizzles, the online sites, etc., there's going to be a little bit of added impetus there as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. And as I say, I think two things are going to happen. Is you're going to see more activity in this quarter as we roll up towards the end of the year to people beating the VAT on new car sales. And then I think what will happen in quarter one next year is people will then look at a certified pre-owned car and see it as a much better deal than buying a new one. So we might see a spike in certified pre-owned, nearly new cars, one and 2 year old. We might see growth in that sector, a little bit of a downturn in new car sales, depending on what the promotions are. But we believe that will wash through. Probably at the end of quarter one, quarter two, that'll all wash through and everything will go back to normal.
Okay, Bill Curtis from Autodata, as ever, making an awful lot of sense. If you have a question for Bill to do with cars, anything automotive, really anything that moves around the roads, get in touch with us, 4001 via the free app or 423 1010.
This is Drive Live with Natalie Lindo-Taylor and Tim Elliott.
It's Drive Live Talks Cars. Our guest today is Bill Carter. But before we get back to Bill, we have a competition. We've been running this all week. Your chance to win tickets to see Scouting for Girls at Dubai Opera on October the 20th. Now, what you have to do is name the boys of the band. You've got three options, A, B or C, and let us know the names of the band. So A, are Scouting for Girls Colin, Nigel and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
B, are they Roy, Greg and Peter? Or C, are they Kevin, Andrew and Gary? All you have to do is text your name, A, B or C, to 4001 or via the free messaging app for your chance to win the tickets.
Very simple. A, B or C. Text us in. We'll repeat that a little bit later, but last chance to get the tickets today. So what are we talking about now with Bill? Modifications, do you think?
Yeah, my favourite pastime, actually. adding modifications to my car.
See,
what I spend all my weekends
on,
doing.
On the back of that black thing that she's got, that great big four-wheeler.
Just, you know, that's how I like to roll. But no, Bill, there is an argument that people do these things, and there's a safety concern, obviously. But there's also the fact that are you adding value to the car, or are you kind of creating it to be a bit of a niche market?
And that's the problem. You see all sorts of modifications out here. Some of them are fine, not a problem, not an issue. You know, if people want to change the colour of the car, a lot of people will have a foil put on rather than actually repaint the car, which is great because you can take the foil off and it's back to normal. Unfortunately, when people do have the car repainted, It depends on how well it's done. It also depends on the colour that you choose. Because you like it purple with pink spots, when you come to sell it, you've got to try and find somebody else who likes it purple with pink spots, or you've devalued it by the cost of having it repainted. And these are the sort of things that people don't think about. You know, back in the UK when I was in the workshop, I'd modified lots of cars, usually to up the power output. And in those days, they weren't mobile computers. They were actually cars, and you could put twin carbs on them and do all sorts of stuff. These days, the modifications tend to be fairly outrageous in the way that they modify bodywork, etc. So just think about this, that if you decide you're going to put a big spoiler on the boot lid of your car, as soon as you start to drill a hole in it to fit that spoiler, you've devalued that car. And you've devalued it by how much it will cost to either repair or replace that panel. Because not everybody will want that huge great tea tray stuck on the top of their boot lid or push starting handle or whatever you choose to call it. But that's what people forget. Now, the other thing to bear in mind, which is really, really crucial, is if the car is still under the manufacturer's warranty, have what you've done to that car invalidated that warranty.
That's actually quite a good point. You know, if you're changing anything to affect the engine, any of those kinds of things, it invalidates the warranty straight away.
It extends to things like vehicle lifting kits here as well, doesn't it? There's a whole gamut of things that you could effectively devalue the car to the value of that kit and more.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if the modification is carried out by the authorised dealer and it's a recognised modification, then that doesn't invalidate the warranty. You still have the issue about whether somebody else would want to buy that car with that modification, but that, you know, and again, you're into the devaluation process. You know, even something as simple as putting a bigger set of wheels on could, in theory, invalidate the warranty, because you're overloading the bearings on that hub by putting a bigger wheel on it.
And Bill, does this extend to insurance here? That's something I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, because if you do not notify the insurance company that this is not a standard production vehicle, in essence, the insurance could be invalid.
You also need, don't you, Bill, RTA approval, and that, I think, is really important.
Yeah. They changed the rules, I believe it was earlier this year, that certain modifications have to be inspected and approved by the RTA before you can register that vehicle.
Okay.
And obviously, the problem has been in the past that lots of these modifications have gone on. They haven't been checked to make sure they've been done properly. So, you know, there's all sorts of issues that could still be running around out there on the road that are not particularly roadworthy. I mean, you know, we hear these horror stories about people's cruise control getting stuck and things like that. In my opinion, 9 times out of 10, that's due to the fact that the vehicle hasn't been serviced properly. You know, if you have the car serviced at the authorised dealer, they've got the equipment that can run a quick electronic diagnostic check and tell if there's a fault in that vehicle. You take it to an independent, have they got the right computer system to talk to that car? You know, this is how crucial it's getting nowadays.
Well, it's not to say that all independent garages are thieves and scoundrels any way, but it is the point that not all independent garages are equal.
That's right. You know, there are some that are well known, are very, very professional, have got a really good reputation. They've invested in all the latest equipment, and they've had people that have worked in the franchise dealer network and have been trained properly, etc., etc. But on the other hand, at the lower end of the market, you get the guy who's got a pair of mole grips and a big hammer, and that's what they do.
Amazing what you can do with a hammer, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah, incredible. Yeah. But so, you know, there's a lot more involved than people realise.
All joking aside, though, if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, it's my dream, though, to have my car with a tail thing on it and something else, what would your genuine advice be to them?
That's fine. If you intend to keep the car for any length of time, then fine, you're happy with it. Just bear in mind that when you do come to dispose of that vehicle, you've either going to take a hit on the value, or you've got to find somebody who's got the same taste as you have in those modifications. I mean, you know, you know that some of the things we see here, cars covered in fur and all sorts of bizarre things. And
That's Tim's car, by the way, not mine.
I tried to feed it some doggy treats as I came in, but it nearly bit me. So, you know, and you have to think about these things that you know, are you going to keep, if you're going to keep the car 3 or 4 or 5 years, then it doesn't matter, because yeah, at the end of the day, you're living with it. But if you tend to change your car every year, why are you spending money on modifying it? Why didn't you buy the car you actually wanted in the first place? But be prepared to take a hit on its value. I had a conversation with a motoring journalist who complained that a friend of his was trying to sell a Toyota 86 back to the dealer. And he said he got a terrible part exchange price for it. He said, mind you, it was modified. And I thought, well, that's the answer. That's why you got a terrible part exchange price for it. It's not a standard production vehicle. And the franchise dealer can only supply a vehicle on their certified pre-owned scheme that meets their criteria. And this is vehicles modified, doesn't meet their criteria. They're going to have trouble shifting that, so that they'll probably have to trade it out.
Modding is niche, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, without doubt. I mean, as I say, I've got nothing against modding. I've done plenty of modding in my past myself. So I understand why people want to do it and why they do, but they have to understand what the consequences are.
Bill Carter's here from Auto Data. Questions for Bill. If you have something to do, ask about your car, your vehicle, your license, something to do with motorised vehicles, get in touch if you would like to. 4001, the free app. Accident on the 611, that's the Emirates Road. Charger bound at the Hatter Oman exit. We have a text in here, no name, but thank you for getting in touch. Traffic's backed up 4 kilometres. Hatter Oman exit, charger bound, so northbound on the E611. That's what we know about. We'll update the traffic in a short while. We're coming back to Bill to talk more in a moment. Here's a question. How safe would you feel if you've been in an autonomous car? How safe did you feel? But how safe would you feel in a self-driving vehicle?
This is Drive Live. Get in touch with the show.
Text us on 4001.
Bill Carter is here from Auto Data on Drive Live this afternoon. Hisham texts in, and this goes back to the conversation, Bill, we were having about value of cars, modding, whether that detracts or adds to the value. Of course, in most cases, it detracts. I think we should stop thinking about the future value of our car, says Hisham. We should enjoy it the way we want, the colour we want, and just enjoy the car as much as possible. If we think about the resale value too much, everyone will end up with a white particular make of car. I won't mention the make of car. You can guess which one it was, which is a reasonable point.
It is, yeah. It's very, very, very true. But the hard facts of the day are that if you're going to keep a car for, you know, 1 or 2 years, and you plan to change it, you want to get the best deal that you can. That you know, everybody looks at what they pay for the car, and that's only part of the story. You know, it really is only part of the story. You've got to look at what the whole life costs are. So what's it going to cost you for servicing, and how much is that going to be worth when you decide to change it?
Why did you have to remind me about that?
We've just had the most fantastic text in for you, Bill.
Yeah.
Says, Bill, you sound like a boss. They say, have you considered doing a film with Guy Ritchie? <Not from him. laughs> You do, you'd trust Bill, wouldn't you, if he told you that you needed to come with him?
Do you know what?
My boss wants to speak to you.
Come with me.
That East End, that was really creepy. That East End lilt there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't get rid of it. It's there forever.
Give us an up the Amers. Go on.
Oh, an up the Amers.
See, every time. Amen. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. So we asked a question just a few moments ago. Do you or would you feel safe in a self-driving car? And my argument is that I think most people at the moment probably don't. And it is that kind of NLT. What are you like? That lack of control?
I definitely would not yet feel comfortable in an autonomous vehicle.
Mm. Bill?
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me too much. I've driven lots of vehicles on test tracks and tried out some of the different gizmos that were around. You know, even going back 10 years ago, it's surprising. So it wouldn't bother me too much. I'm a gadget freak anyway, so my wife calls me gadget man. So
you are slightly, I suppose. The thing is, I mean, the simple fact is autonomous vehicles are coming, probably sooner than we think. We all know that. I know you think that hybrids are the... I think I'm right in saying you think hybrids are the way to go at the moment in terms of the next step.
Yeah, it's a bit of a toss-up. Yeah, but I think the thing that is going to be better than hybrids is hydrogen fuel cell, but that's still a way off. You know, AlphaTame have just, I think today or yesterday, launched the hydrogen fuel refueling centre at Festival City, because they brought three vehicles over to test for very extreme climate testing here. Now, I believe hydrogen fuel cell is the way to go, because you don't have the problems of batteries and et cetera, you know, and all the ungreen things that are on hybrids and electric vehicles.
So, and the speed of filling up as well.
Of filling up with hydrogen, you're looking at about 6 minutes, you know, which is incredible. So I think that's the way to go long term.
There's a study that we have in front of us here from the American Automobile Association that says 3/4 of Americans feel unsafe or will feel unsafe when completely autonomous cars are here. Yeah. They don't feel ready to go on that. And in that veil, Intel have used basketball player LeBron James to try and convince the American people that, you know, they're safe. It's a good way to go. Here's the advert he's got for them.
Some people are fearless. No pressure too great, no stage too big. Not afraid of anything.
Yo, Bron, your car's here. Nope, it's safe.
It seats like 80 times better than you do.
But I see there's no driver. Get in.
Intel is helping power autonomous cars you can trust, so we can all be fearless.
Hey, yo, I'm keeping this. I'm keeping it.
I watched that ad and I just thought, oh, LeBron, you're so cool. And of course he is. But it is a very smart way to get across to people that actually the point here is that if you're in a driver's car, it is safe.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, people forget that the hours and hours and hours of testing that goes on before any of these things hit the road is, you just would not believe. You know, and that's why when you consider just for a normal petrol car, they, you know, that most manufacturers will do testing out here sometimes for 2 or 3 years to make sure that vehicle can cope with the conditions out in this region. So when you start talking about software and the coding and all the rest of it, you can imagine that the amount of safety that has to be built in to stop people hacking into it, and, you know, is a low-flying jet's radar going to corrupt it? You know, I had a situation many years ago up in Scotland driving a brand new car on a launch event where a fighter jet went over and the car stopped because the radar on the fighter jet swamped all the electronics on the car.
That's a worrying state of affairs, isn't it?
It was. It was. Believe me, at the time, it was quite frightening. But, yeah, you know, and so improvements have obviously been made since then. You know, I'm going back to 2002, I think it was. But, you know, they have to shield the electronics a lot more now.
The variable is, though, isn't it? And I'm going to stick by this. The worry that I have, and I guess a lot of people have, is autonomous vehicles are fine. They seem to work really well. Yeah. The variable is we've got human drivers on the roads. So that's the problem until every car is driverless.
Yep. Exactly, and that is the point. The point is that while you've still got human intervention, and these cars are doing battle with human drivers, there are still going to be mishaps, no matter how good the technology is. But until the technology is in every vehicle on the road that you get collision avoidance, there are still going to be mishaps.
There are. Bill Carter's from Autodata, being likened to a boss in a Guy Ritchie movie. Somebody else texts him, watch out, Liam Neeson. Give us a, I don't know who you are.
I don't know who you are.
See, it works, doesn't it? Bill, you're wasted talking to us. Hollywood beckons, I think. It's been really good to talk to you. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
No problem.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.